Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with two great guests, Mark Geer. He's from GeerCorp.com, marketing, media, and employee communications. And he's going to be talking about employee intranets, the value of them, why they're important, and how to use them properly. Second, we're going to be talking with Nancy Koshik. She is from the Academy of International Protocol and Etiquette, and she's going to be talking about defining the lines of casualness and proper electronic communication, both very important for today's business environment. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, David. Appreciate it.
No, that's great. Hey, you know, technology, it's everywhere you want it to be. I'm pretty sure that's a commercial somewhere, but we'll just leave that alone for a second and say, hey, technology is happening everywhere. It's even happening internally in organizations and companies. And today we're going to be talking about an intranet. Can you explain a little bit about what an intranet is versus the internet?
Sure. Most companies with 50 or greater number of employees will have an intranet, and that is essentially an internal website branded just like your company externally brands itself, with all kinds of neat functionality which help employees be more productive, share knowledge, and communicate better together. And it's really just that simple. The problem is that the choices out there are many and varied, and it's important that when you have an intranet, if you don't have one, that when you build one, that you build one with, you know, certain foundational principles about, you know, and a knowledge about employee communications, so that you essentially provide employees the information that they need and don't assault them with information that they don't.
Yeah, I mean, because right now, look, we get bombarded with plenty of information every day, right? Email,
absolutely.
We get our phones going off, whether or not organizations like to admit it, even if they admit they don't have no cell phone. Yeah, we still have our cell phones going off. So we're getting bombarded with information anyways. So when an organization start thinking about communicating to employees through an intranet, what exactly are some of the things they should be thinking about?
Well, HR is typically a power user of an intranet because they're going to have, policies and forms and procedures and so forth, but they'll have information about employment opportunities and employee recognition. They'll have compensation information. Benefit information is always important. So HR, big time user of an intranet, and a huge benefit for all employees to have access to all those policies and procedures and so forth. Marketing or corporate communications, big users of intranets because they are always communicating the external brand position and who the company is and what they're going for. Sales teams really benefit from an intranet because they're able to have product knowledge at their fingertips at any time, current pricing, current, you know, product specs right there in front of them. So it's real, I mean, facilities, operations, everybody can benefit from it. And it really comes down to, you know, content is king, right? How you communicate and what you communicate are the two real keys. It can come by via email. It can come via your intranet. It can come, you know, in a face-to-face or a town hall setting. It's really the content that counts, not necessarily the delivery channel. But an intranet is a fantastic addition to any company's delivery vehicles because it is that. It takes away that those 300 emails that you have to deal with and you have to triage. So you get in the morning and you see everything that came in overnight because everybody's working at night now too, and answering those emails that they didn't get to during the day. And so you go through and you think, oh geez, I got to answer that one. So you look at it and all of a sudden it's not bold anymore and you skip down to the next one, and you may forget to go back to it, or you may mistakenly delete an email. And an intranet doesn't get deleted. It's there. That information, you can count on it being there, always accessible, always searchable.
All right, so let's start at the beginning. Let's start at the foundation here. So you're an organization. You're thinking about putting in an intranet in your organization. And you're trying to sell the idea as an HR professional. You're trying to sell the idea as a group of individuals in the organization to the CFO who has to, pay for this. What is the ROI that you would say, hey, these are some of the key reasons why it would benefit an organization to put one in. It would benefit an organization and be cost effective to do so as well.
There's hard costs and soft costs involved in it. Hard costs, a lot of companies can pay for their intranet just in the savings of printing paper and toner. Because we all know those people who get an email and print it out and then put it in a file. I used to be that guy. But essentially, it eliminates the need to do that because, you know, IT is always worried about how much storage space is going on. And, you know, they call you up and they say, geez, your Outlook folder is pretty full. We need you to delete some files or what have you. And you go through and you start having, where do I do with that? And how do I back this up properly and so forth? With an intranet, that's off the table. It doesn't matter anymore. You don't have to do that. So you're going to save server space. You're going to save IT time. You're going to save personal productivity time. You're going to save print cost, toner cost. That's all the, you know, kind of the hard side of things. But within operational efficiencies, what we always say is, what is the cost of an employee saying, I don't know, to a customer? You know, if an employee doesn't have that access to the information that they need quickly and easily, that customer wait time or that inconvenience of not being able to solve the customer or meet their need in the moment, having to call them back or get somebody else to call them back. You know, you can't really calculate the cost of a happy customer. You can calculate the cost of an unhappy customer because they'll go, as the expression is, make one customer unhappy, they'll tell 10 other people.
No, it's very true. I mean, look, this is part of... There's an internal customer too, you know, as I think about this, there's an internal customer and an external customer. So when departments are talking to one another, what's the cost of not having information loss? What's the cost of making sure that communication is consistent? And, you know, as we get into this a little bit more in the next few minutes, we'll talk about how to develop one and put it all together. But, you know, it is part of the communication process. And what we find, certainly in doing HR consulting and doing all those things that, you know, are necessarily HR. Communication is where the breakdown usually is. If somebody drops the ball, the piece gets lost, the email doesn't get there, something happens.
Absolutely. And again, that has a definite cost. And beyond that, you know, the information overload that we're all experiencing, as you alluded to earlier in the conversation, you know, we have our cell phones because we're getting, you know, business information via our cell phones or our tablets or what have you. We're sitting at our desk, we're multitasking, we're doing all those different things. And the sheer amount of information is drowning us in a lot of cases. And so being able to have a way to prioritize things that is intuitive and accessible, that's the key, and that's what an intranet should do for you, a properly built one. And then, you know, there's all kinds of statistics. I'm sure you know these, David. It's employees feel demoralized. I think there was a survey a couple of years ago which basically said 52% of employees felt overloaded with information at work, and that caused the vast majority of them to feel like they weren't doing their job well because they couldn't cope with that extent of information.
No, it's very true. Yeah, all right, so we've talked a little bit about what the ROI is. We've got the CEO on board. We've got the CFO on board. Congratulations, by the way. So we're ready. We're ready to go. We're ready to set up the structure in terms of making an intranet happen in the organization. Well, I'm sure that's pretty simple. You write a couple lines of code, you put it up, boom, done, right?
Well, there are a lot of ways that you can go about doing it. There are a lot of platforms out there. I actually have a proprietary intranet platform as well. But, you know, many companies will choose to build their own. Many will select something like what we offer. Others will, you know, everybody's heard of Microsoft SharePoint. SharePoint is an amazing tool. It can do pretty much everything, might even be able to bake cookies, I'm not really sure. The problem is it's very complex, takes a lot of training, a lot of retraining, and is quite costly. And so the other, you know, kind of off-the-shelf platforms and so forth are designed to be a little bit more friendly and approachable, more like something that you're kind of an internal Facebook, if you will, to a certain extent. But some of those are a little too social. You know, at the end of the day, we're running a business. We don't want one that's going to encourage employees to do things that aren't really kind of moving the company forward. So you have to be very selective in what platform you choose, and you have to find one that is adaptable to your organization, easily changeable, easily updatable, and as I said, intuitive. So people, there's not a lot of training time, and people just kind of get it. Like when you first went on Facebook, yeah, it was a little bit, I don't know, but in just a few minutes, you got the hang of it. You figured out where things were, and you were able to use it. That's what an internet.
Well, I think this goes back. This goes back to what you said before: is that it has to be useful for your organization. It has to be something that is easy for somebody to grasp onto, because people have so much to do, they won't use it if they don't see the value in it. Right? They don't use it if it's not ease of use. They won't use it if they just think it's another thing I have to do every day. Right?
Exactly. And they won't use it if the content isn't good, if it isn't useful, if it doesn't engage them, if it doesn't cause them to doesn't give them a benefit. So it's always the whiff and what's in it for me. And, you know, you really have one chance to launch an intranet. And when you do, you need it to have really good, strong information on it. And even some entertaining things on there. And a lot of companies lose sight about how they present messaging, because the messaging is, as I said, as important. You know, can your intranet do video, have a slide share on it, show a PowerPoint? You know, does your company culture foster the idea of, you know, videotaping people about different issues and so forth and posting that on, giving them the freedom to post that on the intranet so that people are constantly learning? Does it give them the ability to converse back and forth about a project or an idea, and even brainstorm, and then log all that information so that you can see what that trail of thought was? There's a lot that it can do. Very few of them do it perfectly. There probably isn't any such thing as a perfect intranet, but you need one that can be flexible enough to adapt.
We're talking with Mark Geer of GeerCorp.com, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Mark Geer of GeerCorp.com. We're talking about having an employee intranet and the tech part of this whole thing. Mark, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
So the first half, we talked quite a bit about getting the ROI and getting the CFO to sign off on it. We kind of talked a little bit about how you might think about setting things up. One of the benefits that we should talk about is how an intranet can unite the culture. For example, if it multiple offices, multiple locations, this is a way that people may be able to hold a culture from section to section to section of an organization. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. The one of the great things about an intranet is uniting a dispersed workforce. If you have salespeople on the road, they need to have that umbilical cord back to the home office. And you know, email does a certain amount of that. Phone can do a certain amount of that. But having an intranet that they can access in the cloud and gain access to information and hear what's going on and see what's going on, the latest news, the latest developments across the company footprint, very, very important. And, you know, I worked in a very large financial services company and in the internal communications arena. And we had 6,000 employees across six different states. And, you know, in my travels around the country, I found that the employees who were in the far reaches of the company footprint felt more disconnected, didn't really feel like they knew what was going on with the home office. And so, you know, we took that directly and went back and tried to address those things specifically, and an intranet is a great tool to help them feel like they're just as much a part of the organization and just as plugged in as anyone else. And you know, remote access is a huge plus for any intranet system. Being able to access it via the cloud and be plugged in is huge. If you remember a year ago, the new CEO for Yahoo decided that she was going to kind of pull back on the remote workforce policy and bring people back into the office. And her thought process isn't completely flawed, but I disagree with it. People do collaborate better face to face, and I'm kind of in the old school. I'd rather do a face to face meeting than anything else. But productivity goes way up when workers have the flexibility to, on a day when, you know, they're getting 6 or 8 inches of snow or something, they can work from home and be completely plugged in. They have all their files. They have access to all the information that's going on. They can interact with employees on a very close basis via the intranet, via the phone, and via email.
When you're talking about a remote workforce, that's happening more and more across the country. When we're talking about an intranet, tell me about the size of an organization that should really be looking at this. So, I mean, think about a company that has 10, 15 employees. Is it worth having something like this for that size? Where's the break on this? Is it for a small organization? Is it for a medium size? Talk about that a little.
Obviously, the larger the organization, the faster you can make the decision that this is going to help across the board on every level. The smallest organization, No, they don't really need one, because if you're able to sit in one office and everybody's within reach, it can be helpful, but it's not a necessary thing. 50 employees is more or less the jumping off point. Or if you have more than one location, that can be the deciding factor for you as well. Because again, having people who are away from the main office, hallway conversations take place, you know, water cooler conversations take place, whatever, and they just don't feel like they're as plugged in, and it's totally a legitimate feeling, and it can help mitigate that.
If an organization is saying to themselves, okay, I've come to the conclusion this is something I want to do, I have the dollars for it, I think it's an incredible value to do this, I think it's going to help our culture, it's going to help our organization, take and walk somebody through what the process is from kind of start to finish of how to put this all together and make it happen. And let's assume for the sake of argument that they're going to get a package or something off the shelf, because I will say that certainly today, if you have the advantage of getting something that's off the shelf, it already works. It's just a matter of, does it work with the technology you have? And I guess you can address that too, because I think that's a good point. How does it work on, does it bolt on the backside? How does it work with the systems that you have? Kind of bring that all together for somebody here in the last, you know, 3-4 minutes here of our time today.
Sure. Ideally, it should be a cloud-based internet system, so that it has that remote capacity. People don't have to log into the company and then get through your company firewall and get to information that way. So you know, something just like they would access, you know, Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever, they have access through a security pass to your intranet and all the information that's on that. And most offerings do have that ability now. It's just how well they do it. If you type in intranet software or in social intranet or something like that into Google, you're going to get more returns than you can shake a stick at. And it can be very daunting. And I advise clients on exactly that, how to navigate, knowing from my, you know, 15 years in doing this, knowing what types of organizations benefit from what types of systems and what their particular requirements are, help you kind of navigate that. I was working with a bank recently, and they decided that they wanted to, you know, capitalize on a system that they currently had using for their external website management. We went through the process, evaluated it against SharePoint, and decided that they would stay with their existing system because of a number of different benefits. So to have a third-party person who's seen a lot of different systems, as I have, going through that process with you to help narrow things down is the best way to go. Otherwise, you can spend a lot of hours trying to go through that process yourself and trying to weigh the benefits. And the pricing for most of the off-the-shelf platforms that are out there, very confusing, and you know, there are a lot of hidden costs in them, and if it isn't something that's really intuitive, you can spend a lot of money training people, and you don't want that either. So it's a little self-serving to say, but having somebody who knows that landscape help you guide that is really the best way to go.
No, that's absolutely true. And I think this has been a great conversation about something we haven't talked a lot about, is the tech side of the business of HR. And I think that you provide an option for organizations to think about how they can use an intranet, or maybe they haven't even thought of it, or maybe they thought of it but said maybe it's just outside of my ability or my price range or whatever it is. They really should contact you about that. And correct to say that if they go to girrcorp.com, is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. And they can connect with you, or of course, they can go to HR Power Hour after the show today, the HRPowerHour.com website right after the show today. Your information, this segment will be on there, and of course, your contact information. Mark, thank you very much for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. Thank you.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
Because you've booked with Booking.com, you, freedom lover, are on the road and carefree. You're not worried that dealership billboards spoil beautiful views or that the fresh, cool breeze gives you a mouthful of fumes. No, because you know in just a few more miles, you'll be free to rock around in the perfect Booking hotel, treehouse, or rustic cottage of your dreams. Thanks to Planet Earth's number one accommodation site, Booking.com. Booking.yeah!
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. Today we're talking with Nancy Koshik, and she is the Certified Protocol Officer and Etiquette Consultant at Academy of International Protocol and Etiquette. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, David. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. That is a big mouthful of words, but I got it out, and I'm not sure I did that in the proper etiquette, but I'm trying.
It is a mouthful, I do have to say. That's why we shortened it with the initials N-K-A-I-P-E. It helps.
No, it absolutely does. It certainly does. Well, you know, this is an interesting topic, and we certainly have not had anyone talking about etiquette and protocol, and certainly when we're talking about this, we're really talking about defining the lines of casualness, especially in electronic communication. This is an area that I think will be fascinating to the audience because we all get these emails. We all get these things that are all in caps or they got misspelled, and we kind of text write as we do things. Talk a little about how you got into this, why this is so important, and then we'll, of course, go down the line of the issues that everybody faces.
And how we can fix them as well, right?
Absolutely correct.
Well, I mean, in general, basically, etiquette and protocol is now viewed as a form of business intelligence. It's actually created an unprecedented demand for expert training and guidance in businesses all over the world, both big and small. I don't recall there ever being, I'll say a month to play it safe, probably more often, but a month where I don't read an article either via LinkedIn, in the newspaper or in magazines that don't touch on topics related to etiquette and protocol in business. So these soft skills are definitely considered by employers also one of the most important hiring criteria, because you'll get a lot of people that will apply for a job, for example, and work in a position, but how do you outshine the competition? How do you make yourself stand out? And how do you make your company and overall professionalism of your company be different than another competitor? So etiquette is super important. International etiquette, I will say, is becoming, we're becoming a much smaller world. Etiquette knowledge is on the uprise, because clients are dealing with colleagues, people are dealing with clients and colleagues, I should say, on a worldwide level, via internet, through travels and so forth. So professionals want to feel comfortable. They want to know what is considered rude, not rude. Am I doing something incorrect? No one wants to give a negative impression, and no one wants to appear unknowledgeable, right?
Absolutely, no question about it. And when we're talking about internally, in terms of inside the United States, or dealing with one language, certainly, protocol and etiquette outside of the world. And I'd like to break that down into both so that we have the conversation about both. Tell me what you think is the number one problem, and maybe how to fix it, that you see out there today, just overall in general. Number one.
Well, I've got to say the multitasking is a big, big issue. And it does touch on a few topics, which are two key issues. Every time I will go give a training at a corporation, the people that are hiring me and collaborating with me will always mention two key things. Because technology is on the uprise, there's certainly new protocols exist and new etiquette considerations have to be addressed for efficiency and also to maintain respect and professionalism in the workplace. And technology, though it has allowed us to be way more effective work-wise, and also has taught people to multitask, where do we draw those lines of casualness? Where is it that we need to learn to put that cell phone down and communicate with the people that are in front of us? So we're going to talk about that a little bit today, I'm hoping. And also, because of this technology and the multitasking, we're forgetting to make eye contact. We're forgetting about all the details regarding face-to-face communication that happens, and that will never disappear. So we need to go back and address that as well. And again, basically those are the main topics or the main goals of most companies. And what I always end up referring to then is they will always ask me, well, can you please speak to our team and give us and tell them, what it is that they need to do with this electronic technology, what is appropriate, what is not appropriate. And in particular, the biggest issue is cell phone use, the do's and don'ts of cell phone use. And the second would also be attire, because attire and defining business casual. Today, there are many, many different types of businesses that take place. People that might be working in different departments think that they should be dressing a certain way. And I will always have managers and directors come to me and say, you've got to speak to my staff. You've got to speak to my team. And even people at high levels. It's a delicate issue. It's not something that executives want to address, it is a personal issue, even though it is in the workplace. And you're always worried that the person will take it personally. So this helps create etiquette trainings in the workplace and touching on these type of topics as well. There's plenty of topics to talk about, but discussing those two topics will at least help create some kind of a unified front so that everybody's on the same page. And people then realize, oh my gosh, I do that often, or oh my gosh, I do that often. And then it can be reinforced after the fact.
No, you're absolutely right. I think some of the challenges that are faced today are completely different than they were years ago. Heck, electronic communication wasn't even much of a problem 10, 15 years ago. You throw in cell phones and everything else and social media, it has just changed the dynamic 100% completely. So let's break this down a little. Let's take each one of these if we can and talk about them and provide some answers. So let's start with the cell phone. I think that's one that everybody out there at every level can say, hey, let's talk about that. Go ahead.
I could talk about that for at least an hour or two.
Well, we'll have you back to do that maybe, but let's highlight this then.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, every time I'm in a training, when I will address cell phone use, the first question I will ask the people in my class, and I may be giving some of this stuff away, so if any of the listeners will be taking a training in the future, they'll know that I'm going to be preparing them for this. And the question is, who here has decided to, certainly let me be clear about one thing. Before a training, people will always know if we're going to take breaks during the training, what's going to take place. They have an overview of what's going to take place within the next 2 hours, maybe for the entire day and whatnot, right?
Sure,
so
sure.
So they do have an agenda of that meeting.
Yes.
So I will always ask, who has decided to put their cell phone on vibrate at this time? And people will proudly raise their hands, correct? Because
yeah,
they're going to say, well, I put it on vibrate because I don't want to disturb anyone, so I was courteous and confess to the fact that they put the phone on vibrate. But then my following question to them is, why is it that because you have the agenda and you know that we're going to be taking a, say, 15-minute break in an hour, you'll have an hour's lunch in the afternoon and whatnot, why is it that you placed it on vibrate? What are the reasons why you placed it on vibrate? And a lot of the time, I will get reasons such as there might be an emergency, I want to see who's calling and whatnot. Now, I'm always addressing the same things. And then my third question will be the following. Do you plan on responding to a text, responding to an email in a regular scenario, and or answering the phone line while in this presentation or in this training? And they say no. So my response to that is, then why is it even on vibrate? So that is a big question, and I usually leave them a little bit perplexed at this point, right?
Absolutely.
So what ends up happening is that they will say, I will always get, the only excuse I will get is, I sometimes have to deal with emergencies during the day. So my solution to that is plain and simple. Number one, if you're someone who basically has more or less the same type of work day every day, and there are no particular emergencies that you are expecting, that you are currently dealing with, then why not just turn off your cell phone and periodically go back to it and verify your emails during the breaks? Because with every little vibrate that they will get, and I certainly tell them to not place the cell phones on the desk, with every little vibrate they will get, they're basically, for a brief moment, tuning out to what it is I'm saying, and they're telling themselves, oh, I got a call, or I know I've got to answer two calls, or I know that this little vibrate here is an email. Why is it that you need to know that? There's a huge addiction taking place, and people don't know where to find the balance and how to balance all of these things out. And that's where, you know, a new etiquette has been more or less created for effectiveness. This is where the lines of casualness start to cross, and this is where you become no longer effective, you become rude, and you're not acting professionally. So there is no reason why a corporation, a business of any type, cannot have a plan B or a protocol where, for example, if there's an administrative assistant or a receptionist or whatnot, that will know if you have already selected trainings and meetings throughout the day and where and in which room you're going to be. Because if you follow, again, everything is linked in business. If you're following the proper protocol to preparing a meeting, you already know what is going to be taking place at that meeting, where that meeting will be taking place. So you can provide that information to a Plan B person and either leave on a voicemail message for emergencies that must be dealt with immediately, or just for emergencies, if people know what an emergency is. Sometimes that needs to be clearly defined. But if there are emergencies, please contact the reception desk, and I will be located and return your call immediately. So that gives other people, it also trains the caller to reassess the situation and say, well, is this now really an emergency? Do I want him or her to be interrupted at a particular meeting? Because it's very clear now that they can't be interrupted if there is that message that follows through. So Plan Bs exist all the time. So it's how to deal with emergencies and how to define emergencies within the workplace. And it's important that corporations with their staff have these discussions and that it is clear. If your wife, funny enough, I've heard the funniest stories. What would you consider an emergency? They'll ask me. So I'll basically turn around and say, well, give me some examples. And often the type of examples I will hear is one person says, well, I kept mine on while he was in the training because right now I'm selling my home. I said, oh, really? So you got an offer last night or this morning or whatnot. You're in the middle of a negotiation. He goes, no, my home has been for sale, and in case my agent calls me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's defining it, right? It's defining it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's defining it because, again, if your agent knows you're in a meeting, I'm sure that he can wait to give you some news that he had one or two phone calls during the day or whatnot, or there might be a visit. The visit's not going to take place within 3 minutes, you know? Another person, this is something that's a little delicate, told me, well, my wife is pregnant. I said, oh, wonderful. So the contractions already started. You could be waiting, within 24 hours. And he says, no, but we're due at one point sometime this week. Don't tell me your wife doesn't have your telephone number at work and an emergency number. At work, they should be able to reach you immediately. If she's starting to have contractions, she will be able to notify you right away. You will have the message and be able to contact her within 1 minute. So if you need to be disturbed at a meeting and someone calls in at the meeting and asks to speak with you, the people partaking in this meeting will be less annoyed because they know, oh, it must be something special. It must be a special event or something important. And you just excuse yourself and step out. It's really as simple as that. And if you're working with emergencies, you're currently working on something and people are on standby for you, these type of things are considered emergencies. So what you will do is if you need to attend the event or the meeting, you will let the key person know that you may have to step out once or twice. You take a chair near the door and you go ahead and do so. Leave it on vibrate and take care of business. But I will always tell people that if you think you will be disturbed for a long period of time, see if you can reschedule or simply not attend or have someone go in your place.
We're speaking with Nancy Koshik of the Academy of International Protocol and Etiquette. Nancy, you know, it's interesting, and I just have a quick question here. Do you see a generational component to what is felt about etiquette and protocol? In other words, what maybe the younger generation doesn't believe is improper or things that they should be doing versus maybe what our generation, I'll say my generation, might think a little bit different. I was trying to be kind.
Well, it's a very good question. I'm actually happy enough to say that I think the younger generation, well, when I refer to younger generation, I don't know if you mean the same thing as me, but young adults, university students, people getting into, getting ready for their career, because I mean, for certain etiquette and etiquette is applicable to, I mean, we have trainings for youth, so we actually train children in elementary schools and high schools. And, I mean, you don't want to be asking any youth or teen, do you want to take an etiquette class or would you rather sign up for soccer?
No, I don't think that's even a question. No.
They're just going to run away from you. But I will tell you that if you're a good trainer and if you have the proper communication skills and you're able to be realistic about it, because don't forget, etiquette and protocol, explaining immediately that etiquette and protocol is not only for the elite and is not only for formal events, and that this will help you develop a certain power within yourself to realize, what I will always tell youth is, it's about realizing the impact that you have to create your own success and to be treated the way you want to be treated. Because often we associate respect with what we're always doing for other people, So when it comes to even business, I use the same approach. I will tell professionals, or for example, if I work with a car dealership, right, in general.
Sure.
And, you know, salespeople have a stereotype about them. People will walk in and they'll go, oh, gosh, this person just wants a sale. They don't care about me, and they're vultures, in other words. Now, I'm generalizing. Let's keep that in mind, right?
Sure.
So, but the car salesman knows that people kind of fear them and put a barrier around them in the beginning. They will always say, no, I don't need any help, but then why are you there when you can do the research on the internet, you know?
Right.
So it's about learning how to approach people and how to deal with people on a regular basis, day to day, both formal and non-formal, where you can benefit the success. And that's where you pick people. people's interest, and then they say, gosh, you know, she used this example and she used this example, and it's so true. It can be applied to everyday situations. And it's very important to clarify that right in the beginning, and you then see that the interest is the same in all generations. Where it varies is that initial want to know more about it, that initial desire to want to learn about it. And for sure, you know, with lack of experience in the world, the younger you are, the younger the generation, there's a little less emphasis placed on these things. But you, as you know, being of the same generation as me, I think, we basically learned through time that, gosh, you know what, if I knew then what I know now.
Oh, gosh, that's the truth.
You see?
That's the truth.
Absolutely. So that's what etiquette teaches you in every aspect of life, both social and corporate. Very important.
You know, we were talking about attire, and I wanted to get that in here before we come to the end of this show. And Nancy, just as a footnote, I'd love to have you back on for another segment later as we get into this. You know, a half hour is a short amount of time, so I think it would be
Absolutely.
Good to, you know, to dig a little deeper into it. So I'm extending that offer on the air if you're okay with that.
I would love to be back. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That
really
would be great.
This.
So let's talk about, you know, in this last 3-4 minutes here, about attire, a proper business mm-hmm. attire, business casual. Is, you know, the flip-flops, the shorts, the polo shirts, the, you know, it's really all out there, but it's also depending on the organization as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to dress appropriately, and that's the key word, for your title, for the type of business that you work for, and also you have to also assess what type of result you're looking for and what type of communication you're looking for with the people that you're going to deal with, that you deal with every day, whether it's colleagues or clients and whatnot. And once you've assessed that, then you're able to make the correct decisions. Now, yes and no. Not everyone has the talent or the knowledge to maybe dig a little further. I will tell you, funny enough, that our training, which we call the final polish in business, for men, guess how long the training lasts or could last?
Oh, I can only imagine. Probably, let's say an hour or so, maybe.
Okay, well, the actual training for men is 2.5 to 3 hours, if you can believe it. And we always think, well, for men, it's easy. They just got to put.
I'm just thinking. There's only about 9 things you wear as a guy. I mean, that's it.
Exactly. Don't underestimate yourself. men are actually quite fashionable, especially nowadays. Well, actually, they have always been, but certainly what defines fashionable today versus back then is a lot more complex today than back in the old days.
Sure.
I will say that the men's training is about 2.5 to 3 hours. The women's training is 4 to 5. So there is a lot to cover when it comes to clothing and attire. If I may just add a little note,
sure.
Slightly off the topic, is though the trainings are, say, 2 or 5 hours, we do basically personalize should people want 1 hour, 2 hours, and whatnot, so in case people are wondering on the other end.
Of course.
So just letting you know that attire, so going back to defining the lines of casualness, attire is, and this knowledge is very, very important. And in particular, in large corporations that I have dealt with, very, very big corporations in the aerospace division. Again, as I mentioned, the automotive industry, law firms, people deal with wealth and finance. So we're talking pretty big groups as well. And what's wonderful about understanding this is that it puts everyone on the same page, and you don't have to create that awkwardness where you know possibly there might be 2-3 people from one department or one particular executive that's kind of pushing the limits a little bit, and a company has a chance to then reassess what is important to them, what image they want to portray, and regardless of a person's title or rank, what is acceptable and not acceptable for that workplace and what is appropriate for that workplace. So familiarity in the workplace often causes people to cross those lines of casualness. When you're somewhere for a very long time, we have a tendency to forget all of those details, and we try to always push a little bit. Let me see what I can get away with. Oh, no one said anything. Great. This makes me comfortable, and I'll do this. But is it really correct, and are you using it to your advantage? So, you know, and again, crossing the lines of casualness are as simple as, you know, walking into the workplace and, you know, forgetting to say hello to your colleague because you saw them the day before and it kind of feels like one full day and you just get right into conversation. We won't get into that, but going back to clothing, you know, you got to consider, are there a lot of common spaces that you're going, that shared spaces where, say you are working in the accounting department and you're comfortable with your tights and your leggings and a big sweater and a flat pair of ballerina shoes, for females, of course, let me mention that. What you want to do is consider, well, am I in those shared common spaces very often where possibly other people are wearing suits a little bit more? What can I do to bring up my game should someone come into my office with a client from the other department, or should I have to go present something to someone in another department? These are all things that need to be considered. What is considered appropriate, what is not considered appropriate? So again, depends on where you work. It should represent your company, your field of expertise. And basically, one thing that I will tell people is if you are new to a company, this is a very good time to ask, what do you consider appropriate and not appropriate? And even though there are other people that that may be crossing the line and doing things that an employer might not be happy about, that employer will be happy to tell you, well, you know what, even though we do see some people with flip-flops here, I prefer that no one wears flip-flops. So it's a good time when you're new to a company to ask a key person the do's and don'ts.
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, these are things that every organization needs to understand what they're looking to do. We're talking with Nancy Koshik. She's of the Academy of International Protocol and Etiquette. Nancy, it has been a fascinating discussion here for half an hour. I'm really looking forward to having you back, and certainly we'll coordinate that with you. Thank you so much for your information today.
Well, thank you so much, David. I really, really appreciate it. Well, we've got a very diverse program, so information on our website is limited, but you can contact us for information on our corporate program at the initials of our academy. So it's NK, as in my initials, Nancy Koshik, AI, P as in protocol, E as in etiquette.com, and you can contact us toll-free at 1-877-365-2473. And I want to thank you very much, David, once again, and to everyone for listening in. I've had a wonderful time.
Well, thank you. Also, they can go to the HRPowerHour.com website right after the show. And we will be making sure that this information, a copy of this segment, is on there. Thank you, Nancy, for being on the show.
Thank you, David. Have yourself a great day.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour. And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. An important update for employee benefit policies. The United States Supreme Court guides the Department of Labor in the definition of marriage. The legal definition of marriage will no longer be simplified as the union of two members of the opposite sex. Under the law, companies are now required to recognize same-sex spouses as well as domestic partnerships in their benefit programs. Are you doing this? If not, that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, best-selling author of Why Diets Are Failing Us, Peter Greenlaw, will be talking about how companies can reduce healthcare costs through his discovery. And we're going to learn what that is on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.